Hello and welcome back to another episode of the True Kenner Cast. I could act all cool like this is the first time I've done this, but I actually just did about 15 minutes and realised I wasn't recording. And that's the first time I've ever done that in all the episodes. So I put that down to the dabs. I had 3 big dabs before I started recording and drank a coffee and then got over enthusiastic and just fucked up the whole recording. So yeah, let me try that all again. I've been away for a while, as usual, never fucking consistent, but this time I have an excuse at least. I got sick and man, for like 2 weeks I was just out of action, so that hasn't done me any favours, but I'm feeling much better now and we're back for another episode. Before we get started, let me give a shout out to our sponsors. As always, Cream Genetics. Check those guys out on Instagram. Lots of people growing the auto flowers at the moment, as most people do at the early part of the year. It's a good opportunity to throw out a bunch of auto flowers and get an early crop. So these guys work with some really good cuts and they've got quite a few interesting auto flowers that they've released. They've got one with the Mac, Sunset Sherbet, Cookies, a Purple Punch, Gorilla Glue 4, Gelato, Blue Skittles, a Mazar, Magnum, and the Critical 4.0. So a nice variety of well-established ones and some newer ones that are in like earlier generations. But if you want yields, the Mazar is looking like it's a ridiculous grower, so that one's definitely worth checking out if you want some yields. If you want some names, then obviously there's things like the Mac, the Sunset Sherbet, the Gelato, some real interesting terps no doubt from those. So definitely good for those people that want to use their auto flowers to make some hash. I'm going to be doing that, so I'll definitely be letting you know how that goes. I had some issues to begin with. One of the things that I struggled with is putting out the seedlings too early, and they got hit with a rainstorm which oversaturated the plants, and it just fucked the roots because then there was a heat wave and it's ended up making the auto flowers just stunted and then like start to flower. So sad that I fucked that first lot up, but I've just started a few more indoors. I started some of the blue skittles and I'm super hoping that I can fucking get those growing properly, because I've seen my friend Twisted Flowers London growing out some of the Cream Genetics, and he started them indoors and got some incredible looking plants that he's then took outside and they're just grown to perfection. So yeah, he's done an amazing job and an amazing example. But myself, I was sick for a while, which kind of set me back at the time when I was doing all of that, and I had issues with the humidity, plus like that's with indoors, I can't get the humidity up enough, and outdoors it's even worse and the heat wave is just crazy. So on top of the seedlings getting saturated, then they've got crazy heat that they're dealing with. So yeah, it's been not the best start, but now I've got a bunch of straw covering all of the pots, and the plants that I've done that with straight away are thriving in comparison to the ones that it didn't happen with early enough. So always learning, and yeah, definitely dealing with a heat wave. Normally there's more of an opportunity for you to get your root zone established before the heat gets crazy out here, but this year it got really hot really fast. So yeah, I've got some seedlings indoors now and I'm hoping that I can get them established before I put them outside, and then I'll get some real good growth under the sun. So that's the situation with my auto flowers, and yeah, there's some other people doing some really beautiful grows with them, so definitely check those out. Another shout out goes out to Nasha Genetics. These guys have got a new Gushers line coming out soon. They've reversed the Gushers before and got some amazing crosses with that, one of which I'm growing at the moment. The Gushers crossed to the Gelato 41, which is called G41. I'm growing out some of those at the moment. And yeah, they've hit a bunch of new things, including the Mac. As you know, the Mac is notoriously difficult to pollinate and get seeds from, so it's always interesting to see what Nasher do, because they've got the reversal tech and the pollination tech pretty dialed in when it comes to the Mac, and that's why there's so many crosses from them with the Mac involved. They've got like the Hardcore OG Cross Mac, they've got now the Gushers Cross Mac. So yeah, it's definitely interesting. I'm actually growing out some of the Gushers Cross Mac myself at the moment. They're just babies at the moment, so I'm definitely excited about that one, because yeah, if I can get the Gushers terps and get the kind of resin from the Mac, I'll have something very, very good for hash making. So definitely interested to see how that turns out. And also they've got a bunch of new cuts which I'm really excited about. They've been hooking me up with some real interesting cuts to work with and play around with, as well as some seeds to test for them. But some of the ones that stand out to me that they've got at the moment are the Parve selection, the Jokers, the RS11, the Biscotti, which is the Gelato 47, I believe. And then there's others, the Yahemi that they've got, Sunset Sherbet. I love the fact that they've got the Sunset Sherbet and work with that. I'm hoping that they're going to hit the Gushers to the Sunset Sherbet, because that's one that I would really fucking enjoy. So I'm gonna be suggesting that to them if they haven't already done it before and got some set aside. Also, they've got the Apples and Bananas, which is an exceptional cut. And yeah, that's one of the ones that's got amazing feedback from a lot of people that I respect. So I'm glad that they've got that cut. The Jealousy, I've smoked a little bit of that from those guys and another friend in town, and I love the Jealousy cut. That one's real nice. The original one before they re-released it, that selection's from, because yeah, the seed release that they done after was different than the original release that this selection's from. So there's quite a difference in the flavors when it comes to the Jealousy that's out there. Gary Payton, they've got the Oreos, which is a crazy frosty beautiful looking one. So I'm really interested how the Oreos breeds, because that one's got a lot when it comes to bag appeal and actual resin. Georgia Pie, I've seen some beautiful pictures of that, so that one's got me really interested. I've actually got a cut of the Georgia Pie which I'm really curious to grow out. I'll probably be hitting the Comeback Kush to the Georgia Pie, so that'll be interesting. And then they've got the white runts and the pink runts. So that's not even a full list of what they've got, but they're really working with some of the like best cuts out of America at the moment, some amazing selections, and hitting them with the Gushers is definitely a good idea, because the Gushers just reverses so well and adds so many positive traits and good flavors to anything that is crossed with when it comes to the feminized line. So I'm always happy to see them using that one, and I'm excited to see what S1s that they do and what hybrids they do with some of those cuts, because yeah, I can imagine something like Jealousy and Apples and Bananas would be beautiful. So yeah, these guys are on top of the game when it comes to this feminized thing. When I see some of the lists of the things that they're being done, even I'm drooling, because yeah, I've smoked a few of the cuts and they really are deserving of the hype that they've got behind them. So definitely check out Nasher Genetics. I'm going to be at Product Earth this year on booth 404, I believe it is, with Nasher and Cream Genetics. You come inside the main entrance, go left, and we're just on the left, I believe, three booths down on the left. So come through the main entrance, go left, and we're just down there. I can't wait for that. Super excited about it. Okay, so this episode is something that was requested by somebody. I can't remember exactly who it is, but basically it's about keeping mother plants. So that's what I'm going to talk about today. And let me say, I'm by no means am I an expert at that, because I'm always doing things in restricted space with restricted conditions. So I can only talk about how I do it and how it works in my space. But as far as ideal situations, that's a whole nother thing. In an ideal situation, I'd have huge, massive rooms with lots of big lights on the ceilings and big, massive trees of mother plants. That would be my ideal situation. But because I'm working in restricted space and with large numbers of genetics normally, it's very different for me, and it's more closer to someone who's like a home grower doing small scale growing. That's more kind of how I keep mother plants, as opposed to having the opportunity to put them into big pots and grow them out for massive long periods of time. So for me, I rarely have a mother plant for more than a year, probably at the most. And during that time, I grow in cocoa. So what ends up happening is I will take cuts at the time when a mother plant is getting too big or a little bit tired. I will then, before it gets to the stage of being unhealthy, you know, you get to the point where you know, like, all right, this has grown to the height it can be in the space it's got. I've cut it back so many times, I'm not getting so many good cuts off of it now. And that generally for me is around the year mark. So what happens then is, because you're still getting good cuts but you're just getting less, at that point I take cuts from all of the tops on the plants, root them, and then pick out the healthiest, quickest rooting, best condition cutting to be the new mother plant. And from that stage there, for me, growing in cocoa, it's kind of almost a challenge to keep the plant from growing too fast. And that's kind of the challenge of having lots of different mother plants in a small space, is maintaining good growth on them in those tight conditions. And what I do is I go from being in little tiny little Dixie cup, tiny small pots when they're originally rooted and put into those. And then once those are established, before any actual growth really starts on the plant and you have a good little root ball, I then go up into a 1 liter pot of cocoa. And in a 1 liter pot of cocoa, from there, you can get a good sized plant and maintain it for quite a considerable amount of time before the root zone gets to the point that it's drinking more than you can give it. You know, like for some people, if you're at home all the time and you can water multiple times, or you can put it on drippers, for instance, then you could keep them for a very long time in 1 liter pots. I probably have kept plants for like 6 months at least in 1 liter pots and not had any issues with them. And often when it comes to summertime and there's a lot more evaporation and they're drinking more, then during those situations you are having to feed a couple of times. But in general, you can hold plants in those 1 liter pots quite well. And then the key is, what I find one of the issues is, like, when you're growing to flower, you have the tendency to lollipop plants. But one of the things that's very handy is to not do that with your mother plants when they're in those 1 liter pots. What I try and do is take off larger leaf around the lower part so that you expose the actual shoots and the actual like branches to actually allow them to grow a little bit, and don't cut them off. And then that way what it allows is that in those 1 liter pots you can kind of keep topping the plants and cutting them back to take cuts. And when it gets to the point that you've kind of exhausted that avenue of taking cuts from the plant, then you've always got the option of cutting the main stem at the top and allowing for all the lower growth to then become the main plant and to grow up and take over as the source for cuts, because it will give you a lot more tops than the initial ones that you have. And that's one of the things, even when you're not taking cuttings and you're growing out those mothers from a small clone, it's important to top them as early and as much as possible, because you want as many branches and as many sources for cuts. So the minute you take a cut and you're able, like, really, I look at a cut and once it starts to really shoot and grow, I top it almost immediately, so that then it doubles up and you just keep doing it again and again to get as bushy and as branchy a plant as possible. And if you're in a tight space, just keep on top of the defoliation and make sure that you've got good humidity. That's one of the issues that I've been struggling with myself recently and having to deal with. And my new mother plants that I was in from the comeback Kush selections, some of them were struggling so badly because of lack of humidity. And I was sick during the time and I was like half delirious from being sick. And I'm like, Rob, what the fuck is going on with these plants? And they were kind of getting wind burnt and they were looking weak. And yeah, it was basically the temperature was too high, the humidity was too low, and the plants just weren't doing well. But I put in a humidifier into the room and now everything's just flourishing and lush green growth. And yeah, I did a little defoliation and topped everything and took cuts from it all the other day. I'm gonna root a bunch of those cuttings now, which, yeah, that's a bit of a challenge because of the heat doesn't help at the moment, so you have to find the coolest kind of room to put them in. But I'm going to be doing that. And yeah, with the mother plants that I've got at the moment, I've now got mother plants that are in 1 litre pots and 3 litre pots. So those are the kind of stages that I like to go up into, like 1 or 3. These ones were actually in kind of 1 litre, yeah, not even 1 litre cups. They were in like 0.5 litre cups. And then they went into 3 litre pots. So I like to stagger things in that regard. And after the 3 litre pots, they'll go into a 10 litre pot. But that'll be like maybe a couple months from now. It'll be a good few months that I'll hold onto those in 3 litre pots. And then at some point, they'll go up into the 10 litre pots. Like normally I go 1 litre and then 7 litre, but this time I'm trying, because I'm going to have less mothers, my fear is that I can get away with having bigger pots and then bigger mothers. So like I say, normally I'd go 1 litre and then 1 litre to a 7 litre. This time I had them in larger cups to begin with and build a little root base. You know, like the pint. Yeah, I think they're like a pint cup, the bigger plastic kind of cups. I had them in those and then they went into 3 litre pots. And from the 3 litres, I'll put them into 10 litre pots. And that'll be in a few months. Like I say, I'll let you know exactly when it is so that people can actually get an idea. And I'll try and take some photos of them as well. I'll be honest, yeah, when they're looking shitty, you don't really feel like posting photos, do you know what I mean? But they were looking shitty and now they're kind of doing a little bit better, but they're still not great because, like I say, the heat here at the moment's crazy and I haven't got air conditioning, but I'm keeping the humidity up and using LEDs. And yeah, hopefully they start to bush out and flourish, because yeah, I need some nice healthy mother plants. And like I say, when it comes to keeping mother plants, you can kind of stagger the pot size until you get to the maximum size that the plant can be in the environment that you're in. And then at that stage you can either flower them out indoors, or if you time it really good, one of the best things if you're someone who's got the opportunity is that at some point of the year, if you time it well. You can pull your mother plants outside and then grow them outside for the full season and flower them. And those are always real good plants that do well because they've got a massive root base already to go outside. And if you can put them into big pots or into the ground direct, then those have a full season and you end up with a huge plant. So I often like doing that with old mother plants or putting them into the flower room sometimes. I'm pretty bad at just cutting plants and getting rid of them. So often I'll end up putting a mother plant into the flower room. And generally when I do that, it's way too tall to be doing and it just causes me problems. So I don't advise it, to be honest. I think the best thing to do really is to wait until that your mother plant is at the point where it's too tall and you're unable to cut back for the bottoms to grow up anymore and you don't want to do a bigger pot at that point. Like I say, take as many cuts as you can off of it, pick the best one, and then once you've got that one rooted, put it into a pot. Once it's established itself into that pot and it's got some roots showing and it's 100% healthy and established at that point there, then you can get rid of the original mother plant. Because, yeah, one of the things that I'd say that I've learned is to not always flower out the mother plant. It's not the best thing to do often, but it's something I'm bad at doing because you've got a big plant there. You're like, well, save me a little bit of time. But generally, those plants that you kind of exhaust that in, unless you're able to really like pot them up again, put them into an environment where you've got a huge seedling space and you're able to give them even more veg time to bush out even more and then have a huge tree and flower it out, then that's the only time you should really be using those mother plants to kind of to get a flower crop from. Otherwise, like I say, when you've got limited space and you're already having issues in your mother room with the space and height of the mother plant, then it's often not a good idea to put it into your flower room with those same kind of height restrictions and expect you to be able to grow it fully and get the best results from it. So it may seem obvious to a lot of people. It is obvious to me having done it, and even if I would have given it thought and I kind of know that's the case. But like I say, sometimes when you get to that stage where you've got a crop and you're thinking to yourself, well, you know what, if I take cuts, then I've got probably 3 or 4 weeks of rooting and vegging before I can flower something, where I've got these mother plants here, I can put them into the flower room and flip them in a week. And that is the allure to it, to save those few weeks. But trust me, my advice to everyone is to use your mother plants to be mother plants. Take cuts from them until you get to the point where you're not getting as many and it's becoming an issue with the actual plant size, and then just restart with a fresh cut. The idea that you have any issues with like genetic drift or anything like that, as long as you've got no viruses or viroids or no issues with the plant and you're not hitting it with crazy pesticides and fungicides that are damaging it in any way like that, I don't think there's going to be no issues. You just have to take a nice healthy cut and make that healthy cut the mother plant at the right time. So you've got to know when the cut is healthy and when the mother plant is giving healthy cuts. You don't want to exhaust the mother plant and grow it to the point where it's not in a good state and then start trying to make new cuts from it. It is possible to do. You can just take cuts and just get them back to health. But the ideal situation is that you want to be really just utilizing your mother plants to the point where you see that they've had enough, and then retire them and start a new one. And always just make sure that you have the cut rooted and established before you cut away the mother plant, because there's always an opportunity that you're going to take cuts, they get rooted, you pot them up, and then after a week or so, they don't quite established themselves for whatever reason, and then the cut dies off. It's very rare that it happens, but when you're taking lots of cuts and you're doing the pheno hunts, it's easy for these things to happen. So you have to really make sure that things are well established and well settled before you start cutting down mother plants. Really, like, to be sure, you kind of want to see new growth, but if you're seeing new roots through the bottom of the medium, then that's another good sign. It's kind of like different levels of like being assured. The roots, that kind of makes you confident, but new growth, that's the real telltale sign. At the moment you see the new shoots starting to come through and new growth pushing through, then you know that there's already been roots there for a while. The root zone's established itself and the plant is starting to grow. And then at that point, you've kind of got enough confidence that you can get rid of your mother plants and keep hold of everything. But for me, the way I've always done it is take maybe three cuts. If I take three really healthy cuts from each mother plant, then from those three, I pick the healthiest one to be the new mother, and that's how I maintain them. And I've held like sometimes 30 to 40 mother plants in a room with two lights. So like maybe 800 to 1200 watts, depending on if it was ceramic metal halides or if it was LEDs or if it was a mix. But I've done it under like 800 watts to 400 watt LEDs pretty much, and had 40 mother plants in 1 or 7 liter pots, and had them for the best part of a year in those pots in that, and got a ton of cuts off of them. And more than anything, I was mostly cutting the plants back and defoliating and not doing anything with the cuts, because I don't need the cuts, and it's not like I'm selling cuts of my breeding stock. So when I had all those mother plants, it was mostly a challenge to just keep things back and keep them as small as possible and keep cutting them back and defoliating and making sure that they don't get overgrown. So the challenge of maintaining them is mostly around the maintenance. It's a real fucking headache when you've got healthy mother plants that are just growing and you don't need cuts from them, because it's 3 to 4 months between each crop. So it's basically like 2 to 3 months of just cutting them back and doing nothing with them, cutting them back, doing nothing, defoliating. And then when you're getting ready for a new crop, then deciding what ones do I need to take cuts from to get ready for the next crop. And then you take a bunch of nice healthy cuts. Always take more than what you need. So if I decide like, all right, I'm going to do 12 of each of these cuts, I'll try and take 20 cuts off of the mother. So then say I've got 6 strains, for instance, and I want 12 cuts from each of those 6 strains. I'll take 20 cuts from each one, then root them. And then basically the first quickest rooting and healthiest looking cuts will be the 12 that get to go into the flower room. But what I'll often do is put more than the 12 into the small pots, so that then I just see which ones establish themselves as quick as well. And then say out of the 20, rooting's normally pretty good. I normally get 100%, like 98% on cuts. So say I was to do 20, out of those I might have 18. I'll pot up those 18 and then pick the best 12 out of those 18 after they've established themselves in little Dixie cups. And then I see like, all right, the standout dozen, and then those are the ones that will go into the flower room. And then the mother plants just carry on going and keep getting cut back for another 2 or 3, 4 months before the whole process happens again. And then, like I say, after doing that 3 or 4 times a year, maybe a little bit more than a year, then the mother plants now are hardened up. They've grown up to a height where I can't really have them going any taller, and it's limiting the amount of growth that's coming off of them, and they're getting too big. So at that stage, it's time to refresh. And if I had more, like I said earlier, in an ideal world, I'd have huge rooms with like multiple lights, thousands of watts for my mother plants. And then you can have those, it's like when you need lots of cuts, then you can have those big mother plants and have big healthy plants in big 50-100 liter whatever size pots you want to use, and have them growing like that. That would be beautiful. Hopefully one day I'll be in like a legal situation where I've got mother plants in big rooms with massive high ceilings, and it's easy to go in and take hundreds of cuts off of each mother plant, and they're super healthy and lush. That would be an ideal, but that's not how I do things, so I can't comment on how to do that and talk from experience. I can only give my first-hand experience, and that's kind of keeping lots of mothers in a smaller state to get minimal cuts from them, but have lots of different variety. Because I've always been someone that had, even when I was just growing, I kind of had like a dozen mother plants at least. It's like everything had a different use and a different profile and had a reason for being in the stable. And that was even when I was like keeping small plants like alive, and then vegging them, and then taking cuts from those and keeping them alive and not even having mother plants. There was a point when I first started growing where I didn't really have mother plants. I just took cuts from the vegging plants, and by the time that crop was finished, the other ones were vegging and growing, and then I'd take cuts again and continue like that. And I never had any issues when I done it like that, but you do chance of losing things that way. So for me, I've done it many ways, but keeping small mother plants is definitely a good way. And doing it in cocoa is easy because you can kind of get quite a lot of plant in a small pot. So that allows you to then keep a good number of pots in a small space, like in 2 meters, like 10, you can put 4 by 8. So you can have like a decent number of cuttings. I'm not going to do the mental maths on that, so don't expect me to figure it out. But yeah, that's pretty much, you can have them with like just kind of little 1 foot square each little pot, and keep them quite well separated and not overcrowded if you're on top of the defoliation. And then yeah, you just you limit yourself to the amount of cuts you can get from it. But as a breeder, it's not about having a lot of cuts, it's just about having the breeding stock being kept alive. And then when necessary, if I need to get a larger number of cuts, I can mother up a couple more of a particular cut, and then that gives me a more sources for cuts and gives me a larger number. So that's how I kind of do things. And yes, it's a very much dependent upon your own circumstances. And like I say, if you're in a situation where you haven't got a mother room and you're just growing in one spot, like I say, it's possible. The way I used to do it was take the cuts right before I flowered. So I would like trim up all, this is how I used to do things very differently, is that now I kind of use tops as cuts, but previously I would always use the lowers. Because what I would do is I would wait until like 4 or 5 days into flower, and then I would trim up all of the bottoms of the plants that had gone into flower, and with the bottoms of those plants I would root those. And they root really well when they've just gone into flower a few days and they don't quite flower. And if you've got your dome on 24 hours to root the cuts, by the time it's been a week or two and they're rooted, they flip back into veg, so they don't show any signs of flowering other than maybe some pistils. And then those cuts there, I would then slowly stagger the growth with those as well. So I would put those cuts into the smallest possible pots, veg them for a little while, and by the time I veg those and it was time to start the next crop, those would go into the next round. So that's kind of how I done things. And a lot of people I know have done that. A lot of people over the years have just took cuts from the plants, rooted them, and then that's gone to the next round, and they never really had mother plants. And if your plants are healthy and you do that and maintain everything, then that's a possible way to do it as well. But it's much nicer if you're in a position to have mother plants, and no matter how small your space is, it's possible to maintain small little bonsai mother plants or any size you kind of need. So you can really dictate the plant's growth a lot with pruning, training, pot size. All of these things allow you to dictate the growth of the plant. So having mother plants is something that you just got to learn. You just got to practice. You got to try different things. You've got to just kind of figure out what's right for you and what's right for your environment. And that's how you get good at things. There are rights and wrongs, but there's no one way. You have to figure out what's the right way for you and your environment. And the only way you can do that is from really just experimenting and seeing what works for you. So, yeah, if anyone has any questions about this kind of thing, hit me up with them. Throw me a message on Instagram. I think I might do a question phone-in episode on Instagram and record an episode of the podcast with it, because I think I can hook up the phone to the recording equipment and maybe let people come in and ask me anything, and we'll do a little episode like that where people can ask me more questions about things like this, because I'm not sure what else to really talk about as far as maintaining mothers. I guess let me talk about the reasons for maintaining mothers. Well, as a grower, I liked to have something to tick all the boxes, but I didn't know what the boxes were until I become more accustomed to everything that cannabis can offer. So over time, I kind of always wanted something sativa. I wanted something that put me to sleep. I wanted something that made me giggle. So a lot of the time, there was effects that I was going for, and that's kind of gone from the game in this day and age, which is kind of sad, because I do breed for effect and for things to hit me and do certain things and suit certain circumstances, because that's the beauty of cannabis, is that all the different types of cannabinoids and different varieties of cannabis, when utilized for the right purpose, they're amazing. Whether it be focusing on something to do something creative, whether it's relaxing, whether it's pain relief, whether it's to elevate your mood, whether it's to elevate your appetite, there's all these different things. And whether I'm walking a dog, hanging out with family, going to the movies, doing some boring, shitty, menial task around the house, whether I'm trimming, cleaning, all the different highs that you can have. It's like whether you want to get a good night's sleep, but you know what I mean? If you want to kill some pain and have a long bath, there's different strains that are perfect for everything. And that's kind of things that I would try and have mother plants for, is for different things. I would want to have something that I could take to parties that wasn't a heavy indica, because if I took heavy indicas to parties, it would ruin the party and it would just put people out, because in England, people weren't used to smoking pure. When I was going to house parties, the only people that were used to it were the New Zealand people, but a lot of the Australians and English people would just get blasted. So if I had something that was sativa leaning, I would take that. So the Casey Jones was quite a nice one, because I had two phenos of that, and one was a Thai pheno. So I used to love that one for the house parties back in the day, because it's beautiful. And the other one I had was Bottle Rocket, which was Durban Thai High Flyer times Cindy 99. That one was fucking really nice, really, really nice for parties, beautiful, beautiful smoke, and didn't put people into a coma and ruin the party. So that was one. And then there's other ones that are heavy indicas that get you really red-eyed, big Permagrin. I used to love having one of those strains, so that when I went to like social gatherings where it was like family and friends and we're going to sneak out for a little sneaky smoke while like all of the adults are inside, those ones I loved was to take something that I knew was going to blast everyone, because I'd go to like my nan's for a party and have solid stony bud, and all my cousins smoke. So, well, all of the cousins that smoke, we would just slip, someone would be like, "Rich, we're going for a smoke," and I'd be like, "Yep, let's go." And I know that the minute I pull out a pure joint and give it to everyone, we will go back in the house and everyone's literally stinking a bud and everyone's eyes are so red and everyone's got a big grin on their face, and I'd just be laughing to myself because I just know, like, yeah, there's no mistaking it when you go back into the house after you've had a little doobie outside and all the older relatives see everyone come back in just grinning from ear to ear, looking like rosy red cheeks, even if it's a fucking weird night. Do you know what I mean? It's fucking hilarious. So yeah, I really love those ones. That's like one of the things I always want to have in my catalogue of mothers. And then as you go on, there's other things like flavour profiles. Like, you know, if you've got a selection of mother plants, you might want something that's a haze flavor. You might want a haze high. You might want something that's a fruity haze. So it depends on what you need. You know, some people love lemon. So someone who loves lemon, they might want a mother plant in their collection that's a lemon indica and a lemon sativa, so that they've got both elements. So that's kind of how it is as well. As a smoker and from a breeder perspective, I think my breeding philosophies evolved from my smoking philosophies, because that's kind of what you realize. The more you smoke, is you realize about all, not only the effects but all of the different flavors, and then you kind of want different ones in your arsenal. So you want to have all these different things. Like, now there's lots of unique flavors. So it's like, now things people want on it which are hyped up are, people want the gelato terp. But that's like the same as how a lemon terp was well sought after for a long time, and orange terps were sought after, pineapple's been sought after. It's just a different type of flavor profile. And these things will always come along, and the good ones will stay around and be a part of the flavor profile going forward. Obviously, it's important that everyone doesn't rush to do all the same things, and then you don't have no variety. So that's why I tend not to rush to do all of those kind of things, because there's enough people doing that. But at the same time, once certain flavors have established themselves in the market, there's a reason for it. There's more than just hype. There's a difference between using something like Sunset Sherbet, which has established itself as one of the all-time greatest flavors. Same as Skittles. Same as like some of the gelato cuts, but not all of the gelato cuts. That's the thing. You can't just breed with any gelato cut and expect wonderful things, because not all of them breed well. Not all of them are as good as the others. There are better cuts when it comes to things like gelato. So it's not so as easy as just breeding with those things, and then you have those flavors. And for me, it's not something I like to jump on and do straight away. You know, the idea of capitalizing on a flavor that someone else has created isn't something that appeals to me. So when it comes to me and having mother plants and breeding with things, it's like, something has to establish itself. Like, one, I'll be honest, one of the ones that I do want to work with going forward and that I will have in my collection of mother plants is Sunset Sherbet. Like, the Skittles plant, I don't really have no desire. I'm not really a huge fan of Skittles. I understand the appeal and I do like it as a flower and all of that, but when I'm actually smoking on it, do you know what? Maybe I should cross something to it. Maybe I should cross it to Comeback Kush. And then if I can get that kind of fucking punch and potency and a nice Skittle flavor, I might actually enjoy that. But it's like, I don't want to do that and just cash in on the Skittles thing. So it's not until I think about how I can add something to it and what I can do to improve it and to actually then carry it out and make sure that I have achieved what I wanted and that there are goals, and you know what I mean, I have a hypothesis on what I want to create and then see if it does it, that's when I want to do something. So yeah, eventually, like, I will add a couple of those cuts, like the primarily the Sunset Sherbet, to my collection. There's some other interesting things I'm going to work with. And as far as having mother plants, what you got to do is you got to just decide how many mother plants can you maintain, have a bunch of different things that each of them provide you, and then try other things all the time and see if they're able to knock one of your ones out of the rotation. But beware that when you get rid of something from the rotation, there is almost inevitably a point in your life when you're going to regret having got rid of it. But you just got to kind of pass those things out before you get rid of them. That's one thing to do, because if it's special, it will stay around. And you just have to kind of, sometimes it's a hard decision, but sometimes it does get to the point where you have had enough of something. And if you're only able to maintain four mother plants and you've got yourself something fruity, a sativa, a heavy indica, and a CBD cut, do you know what I mean? If a new CBD cut comes along that you like a bit more, then you've got to get rid of your old CBD cut. Same with, oh, now you've got a new sativa hybrid, so you can't have two sativas. There is a challenge to keep one mother as it is, so you have to get rid of the other one. It's like, sometimes that happens, but it's important to pass cuts out to other people. If you've got good cuts, pass them to friends, get them out in circulation, and that way, if you do pass one mother plant out and then get rid of it yourself, always say to people, if you're going to get rid of the cut, please just offer me a cut back rooted. And then that's the kind of standard rule. If you give genetics to people, you just say to them, if you're ever going to get rid of the cut, just let me know and give me a chance to get one rooted cut back. And then that way you back things up with people and you've got an opportunity to get it back at some point if it's still there. And if it's not, they've given you a heads up and given you an opportunity to get it back before they drop it. And in that way, you can have all the things that you need in your smoking repertoire, but constantly update it. And yeah, one of the biggest lessons that I would say is, don't be so quick to just get rid of something and think that a fad is over. Like, if you like it and you enjoy the plant and it's special to you, try and keep it going, because most things do come back around. And if you grow things right and have the right people around you, people appreciate it. And if it's for yourself, then definitely don't bow to trends. Just go for what you like. And yeah, if you find that you like lemon, then make sure you've always got a lemon in the repertoire. If you like cheese, make sure you've got a good cheese cross. It don't matter what anyone else wants or what the hype is. If it's good and you grow it well, people will love it. That's the truth behind it. And having a nice repertoire of mother plants is one of the nicest things, because if you want to enjoy cannabis to its full potential, then you need variety, because you don't want to build tolerance and get bored of things. And that's what often happens. Sometimes you get bored of something because you've had it all the time, and the minute you have a break from it, you appreciate it again. So if you can rotate and have half a dozen things, say you've got half a dozen things yourself, make sure that you've got good friends that grow properly too. And then when you harvest and they harvest, you're able to swap each other a little bit of bud. And then all of a sudden, instead of having six things each, now you've got 12 things each. And with those 12 things, you can now smoke two, three, say you're smoking pure, say you're smoking two, three joints a day. You've got 12 things. You can go 4 days before you have to smoke the same thing again. It's amazing to be able to do that and to constantly hit your cannabinoid receptors with a different profile. It's like, that's how you keep it fresh in your body and keep avoiding like strong tolerance build up, is by having a good variety. And yeah, the joy of sharing and making sure that different friends have different mother plants and have different varieties, especially when you're just providing for yourself. It's important. Like, one of the things that never made sense to me is when, like, if you're just growing for yourself and one of your friends is a good grower who you rate, there's no real reason for you lot to be growing the same thing. One of you might as well do one thing, one the other, and then you can share. The more variety, the better. And that's how me and my best friend, when I was growing up, started growing. That's how we done our crops. We would always have different things flowering and split our crops 50-50. So that way, every crop, we got half of each other's crops and had a whole new variety from another person who was on point. So that was amazing. And yeah, it's good that different friends have got mother plants, because if you've got... This is the difficult thing in this day and age, but if you've got people that you can rely on to get healthy cuts from, then when you want to throw something in for yourself and try something different, it's easy to do. It's like, for me, I never have huge numbers of cuts, but I've always got small numbers of cuts. So when someone just wants to throw in two or three or something, or half a dozen, 12, you know what I mean? Like a dozen cuts, a few different phenos or a few different varieties of each one, I'm able to throw them that and help them put a different bit of variety without them even needing to have mother plants. And it's nice when I can do that as well. Like, I can grab a few cuts off of someone else, put them in and have a bit more variety without maintaining the extra mother plants. So that's another thing to think about when it comes to having mother plants. Obviously, loose lips sink ships, and you don't want to tell no one that you're growing that you don't need to. But if you do have those grow friends that you are sharing the experience with and you trust, then it's definitely beneficial. But beware, speak to you. Do you know what you've got to be like? This is a really important thing that I want to talk about now. As a grower, it is your responsibility to tell someone who you're giving cuts to if you've had any issues in the previous 6 months to a year. If you've had any kind of issue, whether it be PM, some kind of viroid, some kind of root aphid, spider mites, thrips, broad mites, anything, whatever issue they've had, if they've had an issue in their garden and they're giving you a cut, they should alert you that they've had that issue within a period of time. And as a grower, when you're receiving cuts, you should be asking these questions too, and asking, okay, so have you had any issues in the last year? What did you do to resolve it? How long since you last see anything? And establish all of these things, because you should be able to trust one another to pass cuts. But it's not always possible, because sometimes someone might not even realize. So that's one factor. But if you question someone and find out if they've had issues, it might give you an idea that you need to be extra cautious to make sure there's nothing wrong with them. And if everyone keeps on top of these things and we can get past this period of hot plate and viroid and beet curly top viroid and all of these different things that are existing in cannabis, if we can get past it, eradicate all of the mother stock and clones that have got the viroid, get to the point where we figure out what seed stock was made with it and eliminate that seed stock, we can get past that, learn a valuable lesson as a agricultural fucking phenomenon that cannabis is on a legal market, because it's something that when people are investing millions and millions of pounds, they're going to feel it even more than someone like myself. It fucking almost ruined me, but I'm just a small one man guy. Luckily, I was able to bounce back from it, and I'm looking at the bright side and just excited to do new things. So for me, I'm okay, but going forward, it needs to be eradicated on a grander scale, because it will just obliterate legal grows worldwide and ruin things. And the fact it's in seeds means it's going to go further. So now what's going to have to happen is that any suspicious batches of seeds have to get tested, and if it shows up, those seeds need to be eradicated. I threw away seeds that I didn't even really think had an issue because of the timing of when I made them, and then by the time I established when I got the hop latent viroid, it was clear that those seeds were probably safe. So I was overcautious, but a lot of people are just being flagrantly fucking disrespectful and abusive of the position they're in, putting seeds out by deliberately selling hop latent viroid infected seeds. And we need to get rid of it and get to the point where we have got a healthy fucking like plant species again, and we're able to share clones safely without a viroid, because that one scares me more than anything after experiencing it, because you can't see it. And that's the problem when it comes to having cuts from people. It's okay when you're looking for bugs, because you can be safe, you can do certain protocols, you can check things, isolate them and make sure that they're okay. But when it comes to a viroid, like hop latent viroid, you could get the plant, everything's going great, and it's not until you're flowering and you've infected a whole bunch of your mother stock, and it's gone through your whole fucking garden before you realise it's there. And that one is fucking heartbreaking. And like I say, I lost all my mother plants due to that, and chances are some of them weren't infected, but once I realised that I had it in some of them and didn't have an opportunity to get things tested to be safe, I didn't want to put seeds out. If I'd have been maybe just growing flower for myself, I would have grown stuff until I just saw, until I saw a problem and then got rid of it. Because if I'm just growing out the flower, then it doesn't really matter. As long as I'm getting good results, it wouldn't matter if there was a low viroid count like in the plant. But when you're making seeds, even if the plants are healthy and they've got the viroid, that's hilarious. My little nephew just fucking phoned me off of my sister's phone. That's so funny. Yeah, that's what happened there. I didn't realise that my fucking phone was connected to the Bluetooth on this recording equipment. And my little, like, two-year-old nephew just telephoned, FaceTimed me. So, yeah, slight interruption there. But like I was saying about the hop latent viroid, it gets passed on to the seeds. So people really need to be conscientious about that. Otherwise, it's just going to spread that viroid to lots of people and waste a lot of people a lot of time and energy. And like I said, the viral count, which is like how much it shows up when they test, it can be real low numbers in a healthy garden, so people are able to do okay with it. But then stress triggers will make those, and that's when you start to see symptoms and you start to have diminishing results. And yeah, that one's really problematic. And trying to maintain mother plants with that and then taking cuts from it is a nightmare, because some of the cuts can be healthy and some can have the viroid. So it can be confusing when you're passing those into your own room, and you might only have one plant that goes funny and dies off, and you think of a million reasons. Like, I thought I had fusarium wilt a few times when it first started to show up, because the plants were just kind of dying off at like halfway through flowering and just wilting up. And yeah, eventually I realized it was the hop latent viroid that was causing that. And yeah, I had some harsh realizations and eventually had to get rid of everything just to be safe and to have the peace of mind to start fresh. For me, that's what it was about, to know that there's breeders that are just passing those seeds out and passing that on to other people. I had a nightmare year because of that viroid, the way it made me feel as a grower, the way it knocked my confidence, made me doubt myself, the financial implications that it had, the amount of seeds that I had to throw away, all of these things. It was a fucking horrendous time, on top of the fact it was a fucking pandemic. So it's not been fun, not emotionally, spiritually or financially. So the idea of giving that issue to someone else, I could never live with myself. So that's why I had to start fresh, so I could have true peace of mind and be part of the solution, not part of the problem. And that's why I'm now gonna like go back to a bunch of seeds that I've made that I know are clean, and pull out some old stock and land rate and reinvent the mother room that I've got and start fresh. And I've got some amazing male selections from the comeback kush, I've currently got, I think, 4 or 5. Let me think. I've got number 7, number 17, number 34, and number 76, I think. So yeah, I think I've got 4 males and I'm growing them out a few more times. I've got one of them that I'm definitely keeping, and that's a shorter bushy Afino, which reminds me more of the unique standout terp that shows up in the comeback kush, which is kind of similar to number 51, number 53. There was a couple of plants that had a similar leaf and growth shape. They're not the kind of tall, more OG structure. So I've got a male that matches the shorter looking plant, and then I've got 3 that are more OG kind of growth, which are a little bit taller but with amazing branching and structure. When I say OG, it's not OG, it's a much, much, much more improved structure. But the reason I say OG is just because of the height of it. It's got that kind of taller structure like an OG kush. But when you top them out, they bush out amazing. There's a guy on Instagram called Terp Technician. He grew out some comeback kush and didn't top them, and the structure and the branching when they're untopped is amazing. I'm someone that tops everything, but yeah, he did it without topping, and my god, all the lowers and the side branching just looks incredible. And that's one of the traits that I go for. The shorter male that I've got has got the same branching. It's got like basically the side branches are as tall as the center branch without even topping. So it's got like insane structure to it. It's got an amazing smell as well, really aggressive smell on the stem rub, and it kind of matches the leaf shape of a couple of my standout keepers. So that's probably going to be kept for sure. And then, like I say, of the other 3 males, they've got the kind of taller structure, and really I'm just growing them out a few more times to decide which one I'm going to keep, because I can't really keep no more than 2. 2 males is enough. I'd like to have more, but it's like I have to keep a cap on these things, otherwise I just get out of control. Even maintaining the mothers at the moment while I do the pheno hunting on the comeback kush is quite a headache, because I had 38 females there. I've then whittled that down, and I think at the moment I'm maybe around the 15 mark. Out of those 15, I think there's probably 5 that are keepers that have some kind of use for me to breed with, or commercially viability as far as producing good yields and top shelf flower. And then there's ones with unique terps that I want to breed with, and then there's ones with structure that I want to reverse, because I think it will reverse well. So there's a few different things that I want from them, but it's difficult to whittle it down because so many have positive things. But it's like, what do I need it for? If I wanted it just for smoke, I'd probably end up keeping about 10 until I get another pheno hunt underway and then select some more things. But the truth is, I'm going to have to pass out a lot of the keepers that I have no reason to keep, because just because something's a keeper doesn't mean that I have the ability or the need to keep it. So that's one of the hardest things, is when there's good plants that you don't really need to keep around, but they're too good to get rid of. So I'm passing out a lot of my cuts to friends in Barcelona at the moment, and will continue to do so until I've whittled it down to the few keepers that I want. And those are going to be based around what I want to breed with and what I want to smoke. And sometimes those have slightly differences, because yeah, there's some that have amazing smoke, but there's others with a slightly better structure and yield. So that's why we breed things. So I'm hoping that if I pick the ones with the structure that I like from the males and hit the ones with the terp profile. Coco pushing her way upstairs. going through the sliding door. Yeah, like I say, I'm going to do some nice breeding with these, because there's a couple that have got just standout unique turp profile, but we're a little smaller on the yield. So I'll try and hit those with the males, see what that does, do a few different crosses with males and females from the comeback kush and grow those out and see what they look like. And then that will give me an idea of what the males do in their breeding. And then once I've established what the males do in their breeding, then it allows me to use them better and get different things and do hybrids with them, because that's one of the fun things I'm looking forward to, is to hit some unique other cuts with the comeback kush. I'm going to do probably a little freebie line of something soon, just a little tent with a few interesting hybrids of the comeback kush, and then I'll just give those out as freebies with seeds, because I haven't got the space to test them, so I'm not going to charge for them, because that's just how I am. I won't comment on how anyone else is, but yeah, that's just how I am. So what I'll do is, yeah, I'm going to do a little fun little project with the comeback kush males, and then with some of those results, I'll just give those away free with my seed purchases, the regular seed packs. So if you want to get some of those hype hybrids with the comeback kush, then you'll have to buy something that I've actually tested and released properly, and then you can just get it as a freebie, because yeah, until something's tested and I've done it properly, I don't want to charge money for it. And to be honest, some of these crosses I've got no real interest in having as long-term lines. They are more of a limited edition thing, just to keep things interesting and give a few people that have requested those kind of crosses something to work with from my breeding. And also, I'm kind of interested to see what my males will do when hit to some of these cuts, because yeah, as far as structure and potency and aroma and yeah, male selection, I pride myself in doing some of the best selection on males that there is. And if you speak to people that have grown my genetics, they will second that the structure and the growth and things that come from my breeding are very, very good. And even the vigor of the seeds and things like that, I've had a lot of feedback recently which has been positive, which is about seeds germinating fast and growing well. And that just doesn't include just recent seeds, we're talking about seeds that were made like close to 10 years ago now that are getting 100% germination rates on them. So that makes me super proud to hear that, because one of the things I go out of my way to do is test all of my seeds, squeeze every seed to make sure that it's a good seed before it goes into the vial. And then I'll probably throw in a couple of extra little baby seeds if they're smaller seeds that I wouldn't charge for. So you end up with the 15 good seeds and then a couple of little extra ones sometimes. So yeah, that's my mentality with that. And yeah, I think that's about it for this episode. This has been an episode about keeping mother plants. I know I veered off and went on to a lot of other subjects. I think I pretty much covered everything that I needed to with mothers, but I probably forgot a lot of things. So like I say, if anyone's got any other questions, hit me up and let me know. And also hit me up with any suggestions for other episodes. I've got a few guests lined up. I've got a lady from Skunk Magazine I'm going to get on. Juliana, I believe her name is. I may be mistaken. I feel like a fucking idiot if I got that wrong. It's something like that. Juliana, Julie. Yeah, but I want to get some guests on. I've been slacking on that and I'm getting bored of rambling to myself. So give me some suggestions for episodes. I'm always open to more suggestions, and every time I get a bunch, by the time I get round to doing an episode, I've forgotten most of them. So I'll make a list this time. I'm going to do a post and then get some ideas, and also get people to hit me up with ideas for guests. If you've got any suggestions for guests you'd like to have on, then let me know and I'll try and bring that to fruition. And yeah, I think that's about it, guys. Thank you ever so much. It's a pleasure as always. Thank you for all the love, support and encouragement. It really is much, much appreciated. Low times, some of the kind words that I get about the podcast and the breeding and the work that I'm doing and my ethics and my energy that I put out, getting positive feedback has brightened many a low day and brought me through to give me the enthusiasm to do more episodes. So thank you very much for that. It is appreciated hugely. Lots of love once again to our sponsors, to Nasha Genetics, to Cream Genetics. Make sure that you come to Product Earth. Make sure that you come and see us. We're going to have a whole bunch of crazy deals, lots of exclusive seed deals, some really cool merchandise, and we're just going to have a blast in general. And I'd love to see a bunch of people, see what flowers you've got, see what beautiful extracts you've got. Get me baked out of my mind, because I'm going to need everyone to show me love, give me some wonderful things to smoke while I'm out there. But yeah, it's going to be so much fun to just talk genetics and to put my seeds into the hands of passionate growers. Nothing pleases me more than having a little 5-minute conversation. I have to keep things moving at the expos because it's so busy, but in 5 minutes I can have the most wonderful connection with a grower, find out so much about what they love and don't like about genetics and what they need and don't need and what their requirements are, and find them something from my catalog that is going to suit them. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Going to have all the regular genetics you could hope for from myself. We're going to have a bunch of fems from Nasha Genetics. I might have a limited feminized drop myself. There's a good chance that I'm going to have something special from my genetics, a little collab with a friend. And then there's loads of good auto flowers and budget fems from Cream Genetics as well. So basically, our booth is going to have everything you could possibly need. And we're looking forward to meeting everyone. And yeah, as always, Product Earth's going to be the fucking highlight of the year back in the UK. So super excited to see everyone. Thank you, guys. Take care. Peace and love. Okay, do you know what? I just finished this, got it all saved, was just about to post it, and I thought, you know what? I don't think I said something that was maybe important. It's probably definitely important, but I don't know if I said it or not because I just rambled a lot. But basically, when my mother plants are getting potted up, the reason I pot them up at the time they get potted up is when they're drinking more than I can give them per day. So I'll get, because I'm at home, I'll water a plant once or twice, maybe 3 times a day if I have to keep it happy in a smaller pot. But at the point it's diminishing the root zone and it's drying out too quick, before that happens, that's when you want to pot up. So that's the thing that I'm not sure if I really mentioned that I think is important to mention. So yeah, that as just as an ending appendage to the episode is the reason that I pot up. So once I go into like a 1 liter or 3 liter pot, it's literally just a point of water those when they need watering. Eventually it gets to the point where you're watering them daily, then a couple times a day, and then if you're doing it more than twice a day, it can become too much effort and laborious and doesn't help the root zone because it will start to dry out too much and it might start to damage it. So at that point, before that happens, you want to pot things up and make sure that you're able to get the root zone thriving in the next pot. So definitely keep on top of that. You will learn from your mistakes, no doubt. And yeah, when you pot up your mother plant, use a bunch of mycorrhizae because the stuff's fucking awesome. That's a good little plug for me to throw in there because I'm a big fan of that and I've been using that a lot recently and loving it. So yeah, that's it really. That's it. Yeah, I just wanted to add that. So for the second time, goodbye. Thank you very much, guys. Take care. Peace and love.
Shit before, man. Well, goddamn, man, that's heavy shit.